blessed we're here, and we've heard from Mr. Thomas and Mr. Scan and Mrs. Paretovich this evening, and we heard from a number of people from Heidelberg this afternoon. If anyone... I see. Well, if you, ma'am, or anyone else would like to make a presentation, please feel free to do so. We're here for the remainder of the evening and tomorrow.
My name is Jim Martinez. I own 100 shares in Sea Alaska and 100 shares in Kluwakinyu Corporation. I believe that, 1991 was rolling around. I hear a lot of talk about selling the shares and not selling the shares. And I believe I, for one, do not want to sell my shares for the reason that this land has belonged to the Tlingit tribe for many years, probably since Ice Age or long before. I believe that the land that we now live in, that was given back to us by the United States government, is going to be taken away from us by taxes if we do not find a way to save the land from taxes. I believe the only way that we could do it is by giving the land to the IRA for not letting the state taxes out of this land. And if we don't do something in the next 7 years, we won't be the owners of this land. Just like the government saying, here, we'll let you have this land for 20 years. You could play around with it and do whatever you want with it. But after 20 years, we're going to get it back. I believe that the government has done us wrong by saying, here, we're going to give you this land and this almost $1 billion. And you have to start a regional corporation and village corporations to make money. This has torn the village apart. Like they said before, we didn't have any money. We didn't have any land. Nobody fought. Nobody got mad at each other. During the A&B, back in 1929, when this land suit first came on, all the villages and the Grand Camp all pulled together. I remember the people. I remember my mother giving her 25 cents and 50 cents so that they could send a lawyer to Washington, D.C. to fight for our land. They say it's all over with. The land settlement is all done. It's all finished. It's all settled with the native people. You don't have to fight anymore. But that's wrong. The fight will go on for many years to come because this land isn't ours yet. After 1991, maybe we could say this land does belong to us. The fight will have to, A&B and the ANS will have to take up the fight again. The A&B and ANS was the mother and father of this land suit. We gave them birth. And now that we got the land settlement all settled and the corporations gone, who gets the profit? Like John says, the directors, the lawyers, the consultants, they're the ones that get the money. Ever since I've owned the shares in Sea Alaska and the Village Corporation, I've gotten maybe close to $7,000 since 1971. You know, this is the ones that fought for it, the people at Galwood, Helen and Edna, they don't get nothing. They got the same amount I got. But they're the ones that started this land suit. They're the ones that should reap some of the profit now before they're gone. I believe that, you know, like I say, 1991 is rolling close. Everybody thinks it's a long ways off yet. It's not. It's very right upon us, right around the corner, where we'll have to do something about keeping the land. Yes, there are times when I say myself, hey, I should sell my shares or get a loan on it and just give it away, you know, because it's not, like you say, all it is a piece of paper with a 100 mark on all four corners, and that's all it is a piece of paper. We don't have very much to say in the corporation, in either corporations. We go there and we talk, we air what we want to say, and then when it's over with, they forget about it till the next year. We never see any of the Sea Alaska directors down here unless they're coming down to vote, get votes from the people in the village. Then they come down here and they tell you a lot of things. Yet when you get right down to it, they're losing. We haven't got any money from them. In the years to come, I just wonder how profitable it would be, you know, to sometimes, my wife tells me, well, she says, you know, you, like you said, you got what you, from the people, 100 shares, she said, you ought to treat it like such. She said, it belongs to you, and if you give it away, you don't own it no more. And if you sell that 100 shares, you don't own this land anymore. It's not yours. And I believe her, you know. I thought of that myself, but now it's come down to the wire where we have to do something about it. And I believe, I myself fully believe in the self-government. The IRA, the sovereignty of the IRA, which Clark says we doesn't have, but I know that the fella is wrong. So I, for one, believe that the IRA should have the land, and it takes 2/3 of the people, not the board, but the people with the voting stock, to say that the land could be reverted to the IRA.
Would anyone else care to say something?
My name is Franz Anderson. I have a problem with my voice, so put up with me. The one thing that we are trying to protect is our Aboriginal rights. We aren't looking to sell our land. We don't want to give it away. And we don't want the government to give it away underneath us, because we live by choice in our own country. And we do not want that land to go ever, because we believe that our land should go to our children and their children after them. And it's the way I believe. I came into this cold, so I'm sorry I'm not up on it. But somebody asked me to be here, so I'm here at my own expense.
Well, thank you very much.
but we don't want, we never want to give our land away. And the government's, the state better start protecting us on our subsistence too, because most of us live on subsistence foods. Not only by need, but by choice also.
Two distinct views on sale of shares and the question of the land, and I appreciate the fact that you have given me your opinions and expressed with such conviction. Anyone else who wishes to speak is welcome to do so, and if any further thoughts have occurred to any of those who spoke earlier, you're welcome to come forward again.
Are the ones that love that spoke are ready to come back tomorrow?
Sure. No. I think I'm going to call a 5-minute coffee break, and I'm going to have a cup of coffee and collect your thoughts, and we'll reconvene in a few minutes, and if anyone else wants to speak, well, that'll be fine. And if not, it'll be an early evening. Maybe we should reconvene and see if anyone else would like to participate this evening. I saw somebody writing during the...
My name's Barbara Fields, and I guess part of my background, my mom is from... Heidelberg area. I was born and raised in Kluwak. I belong to Kluwak Hinya Corporation, but I live in Craig, so I kind of get a feeling of all the communities, and one of my main concerns is the elderly. And I listened to Elwood talk earlier about selling his stock, and I listened to John talk about selling his stock, and I really felt bad, but in a way I could see it, because like John said, even if he did leave his land, maybe 20 years down the road, the government will decide, well, with the subsurface, that John's land might have something under it, it might be torn up, what's his grandkids gonna have? And I also see my mom's point of it. You know, she's got 14 grandchildren, I think two of them are covered under Kluwak Hinya. I don't think any of the rest are. I think the other 12, how we're gonna divide up the stocks to cover those kids, I have no idea.
The other 12 were born after
1971. After 1971. Two of them were born before that. So I can see both of their points on selling stock and keeping stock. I would like to see everyone keep it. Although I kind of hate to see what the government's going to do once we do own land and we do have a little bit of money. I think they're going to take every other service we ever had out. I really don't see that they're going to want to give us anything else once they give us the land. I'm also really upset with some of the corporations just don't do anything for the elderly and the youth, and I think that it should be a community problem. Right now, most of the communities are trying to go outside. They go to Anchorage, they go to Juneau, they try to get money from the government to get youth centers for the kids and to get lunches for the elderly, and I'm really upset that most of these corporations don't try to do it themselves. I think that if somewhere down the line some of these elderly or some of the people that want to sell their stocks could see that the corporations right now are helping, maybe they'd have more faith in their corporations. Maybe they wouldn't sell their stocks in 1991 if they saw that our elderly were being taken care of or that our youth had a youth center to go to. Lately, there's a lot of talk on child abuse and alcoholism and Social Security funds going downhill, and I think our corporations, although they're profit-making, should deal with some of these problems and should provide services to a lot of these people. They're not going to make any money out of it. But we have people in our town right now that can provide these services. But because somebody from Colorado has more degrees and more know-how, they get all the jobs and our people are being left out. I think it's up to our corporations to look at our own resources and hire our own people. I don't have any solutions, but I would like to see the corporations look more into their own people and not so much money. They're always looking into money. And we don't see any profits from it. Where people of Kloak saw a van going around that they owned, that were serving the elderly, that were serving the young people. Had a youth center they saw their kids going to all the time, a building that's going to last for a while. I think people would take more pride in their corporations, and I don't think those stocks would be sold. At least a lot of them wouldn't be. I'd feel a lot better if I knew that my kids were being provided for in their community. I think a lot of the reason some of the people do live in Ketchikan is because they have the services over there. Some of the people in Seattle, we just don't have the services here, and we could. I think we could do it. And I think our corporation should really look into it. And it's not just here, it's up north. I just came back from Rural Cap, and everybody has the same problems. They all have the alcohol problems. They all have the child abuse problems. But we look too much to outside people to solve our problems. We're not doing it amongst ourselves. That's a real problem. I'd also like to see, I know the kids in grade school, junior high, and high school all get education on how the government works. And when we went to Rural Cap, we got a lecture on how the legislature works. And I don't know why most of these people can't let our kids know about Alaska Native land claims and know what they are and get them familiar with it. I think it's real important, and I think leaving it up to the teachers whether they want to do it or not isn't working. I think it should be mandatory state law that people learn about it, whether they're Native or not. It affects everybody. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Ms. Fields.
My name is Mary Brown. I have 100 chairs in Sea Alaska and 100 chairs in Kloak Kenia. I am presently a board of director for Kloak Kenia, but I'm here on my own. Whatever I say tonight has nothing to do with being a board of director. I am also ANS president of Kloak, but I am not here representing ANS either at this time. Oops, too close. I guess my feelings on the Alaska Native Land Claims Act has probably been viewed by everybody that has spoken today already, but unfortunately I wasn't able to hear what everybody else had to say. But my feelings are there have been a lot of good things that happened for the Alaska Natives with the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act, and a lot of bad things. And Prince of Wales Island has really suffered, I think, by the from the loss of the health and social services programs. And also, because we were given land and supposedly given lots and lots of money, I think the government felt that we were really rich people now and we didn't need their help anymore. And a lot of our people have really suffered for that, because like Pauline mentioned little bit ago, if people don't have the money to go in to Ketchikan, then you have to stay around here and suffer and get what help you can through our health aids, because you can't afford to go into Ketchikan anymore without the GTRs that used to be available. So you see a lot of people around here on the island sick, and there's nothing anybody can do to help them, because there's the economy on the island is not really, really, you know, like it used to be. We don't have the cannery. Our mill half the time isn't even running. And as far as any other kind of jobs available here, just very few select people get them. And so a lot of people are very unfortunate and can't get any help. When I first moved back here last year, we did have an alcoholism counselor, but she, well, the funds for Prince of Wales Island got pulled because Ketchikan was losing some fundings from their program, and instead of taking a loss in their program, they took ours away from us. And I really felt that that shouldn't have happened, but there was nothing we could do about it. We had nobody to go to and say, hey, you know, why are we being left without? I mean, you know, this is a big island. There's a lot of communities on this island. And like Barb said, we have a lot of alcoholism problems, especially among the youth, and drug problems. And they have nowhere to go to. The nearest place they can go to is 6 miles away. And so you know, there's just been a lot of bad things with the Settlements Act. I don't know if being given land has been good. You know, I read Mr. Scan's notes and about, you know, even then, like you said, just few people are benefiting from that, the board of directors, by their per diems. I used to resent it because I wasn't getting any money, you know, and here everybody's been telling us that we're rich people, and we aren't. And whether or not the government takes our land back from us in 1991, you know, that's still to be seen. Nobody knows what's going to happen in the future, you know. But as far as selling stock, I have 100 shares, and three of my children have shares in Sea Alaska and Kloakinia, and I have talked with them quite extensively about 1991, and people are going to approach them. One of my boys is going to be 18 next year, so when 1991 comes along, he's going to be an adult and be approached and asked to buy his stock. And if he doesn't know anything about what's good and what's not good about our native lands claim, you know, who knows what kind of decision they're going to make. And those people we have to protect, like Barb said, by getting our land claims taught in the schools. And I think there's been a really big push for that in the last year of trying to get the schools to teach this course to the youth, because those youth in the future are going to be our leaders. And if they don't know now what's going to happen then, we're going to be in a big loss. I had all kinds of things that I wanted to say, but I just can't get it all together right now. But my feeling is I'm not selling my stock, and neither are my children, if I have anything to say about it, because this is our land, and whether or not the government ends up taking it away from me, I want to feel good inside myself that I kept my land until I couldn't hold on to it anymore. Not because I had to sell it, but because it was taken from me again like it was taken from me before. And what I have now, I'm going to fight to keep. Thank you.
Would anybody else like to say something this evening?
What I forgot to bring up was round logs being shipped out of Alaska. At the time, we thought we were doing real great. Sea Alaska was going to go cut timber. They didn't have to run it through the local mills. land. Well, that would save us money. That would really put us in a financial, good financial standing. It ended up that we were the losers on Prince of Wales Island, because once they started the round logs going, our mills closed down. There was mills on Prince of Wales, well, in southeastern Alaska. Now, because of round logs being shipped, there were just a ship that just left here, that left our community. It took out round logs, and nobody had to put a nick into it. Where before Sea Alaska got this round log thing moving, Wrangell, Ketchikan, even here in Kluwak, there was people hired. People going out there every day to go to work. Once that started, mills, one by one, were shut down. Just because we thought we had something going for us, we just cut our own throats by having these round logs shipped out of the state. Now our local men have no place to go. They've drawn their unemployment. They drew that all out, and still that mill is closed. And the reason it's closed is because he was putting in his equipment to make lumber. But why should a man go out to cut lumber when he could ship out logs and cost him? It's a cheaper way of sending out logs without putting one saw to it. And so we have many men unemployed here because of round logs being shipped out. We have no employment. Our local hire has Oregon, Washington, and California license plates on their trucks. And I feel that if we were to upgrade our timber, I feel that we should revoke that law and put it right back where it was, where our local men can hike to work every morning, that they would be able to be employed, where Sea Alaska is sending them out from Long Island. Before, they couldn't do that. The only one that's making money on our timber now is probably Washington, Oregon, and California people that can leave as soon as the snow hits their behind. And once the first unemployment checks stop, they're right back in Alaska again. They're out there, snow up to their butt. They're hiking those hills with snow in it. And we cannot even get jobs. My sons, nobody can get jobs up there anymore. Because we own paper, but we cannot get the jobs. So I feel that if anything, our Sea Alaskan legislature should fight and get that round logs discontinued from the shores of Alaska, because it has closed too many mills and too many children are hungry. That's it.
Just before we adjourn, let me remind you that we will be here again tomorrow at 1 o'clock, and we'll be here from 1 o'clock until 5 o'clock tomorrow. And if you wish to come and add anything to what you've said, you're most welcome. And if others are here, well, they're of course most welcome too. Let me just thank you for the presentations that were made tonight. I think they were very helpful to me. You certainly told me what you were thinking on both sides of the question, and I do appreciate it. So we'll adjourn then till 1 o'clock tomorrow.
First of all, I'd like to welcome you to our country and thank you for accepting our invitation to visit Heidelberg. My name is Thomas Abel, and first of all, I'd like to give you a little bit of background on myself for purposes of understanding possibly what perspective I may be taking when I'm speaking to these issues. I'm originally from Craig, Alaska. I was born in 1947. I'm a Haida and of the Eagle Clan. I attended school at Sheldon Jackson Schools, and I don't have time to explain Sheldon Jackson's role in education in Alaska, except I can tell you that Sheldon Jackson is the reason that there are not Indians in Alaska, is that he instituted the use of the word native, which separates us from the Indian in the normal usage of the word. I've attended the University of Washington in Seattle. I started out in engineering, and that was not satisfactory, and I ended up going back several years later to go into Indian studies, Asian history, and sociology. The purpose of changing direction and going into Asian history and Indian studies was I could see the Alaska Native Claims Act, Settlement Act coming, and wanted to know more about where I knew our markets were going to be for timber and fisheries. And I did not receive a degree because I didn't think that the school was responding to the things that I needed in terms of education. And attending boarding school, the importance of attending boarding school to me is something that I have to stress, because as a result of attending Sheldon Jackson, I knew a lot of people at Mount Edgecombe Boarding School, which was the Alaska Native boarding school. And as a result, I know people all over Alaska now that are doing the same thing I am doing, and we've lived together in Anchorage, and we now know what each other are doing. We're starting to get a little handle on some things, but it seems to me that everything is still out of control, and getting a grasp of it is still many, many years away. And I think that the major issue of ANCSA is 1991 and what we're going to do when we get there, if we have the ability to do anything at that point. And getting into this arena, or the area of Native politics, quote unquote, came about kind of by accident. I was elected president of the IRA Council in Craig and learned how to operate a nonprofit. And we had many programs during the time when there was a lot of federal money available, and our concentration was on education. And we had at one time an early childhood program in Craig and Kluwak that demonstrated that with proper motivation and instruction, that preschool children could increase their rate of education at nearly double the rate that was expected. And we have evaluations that prove that, but we don't have the money to continue the program and keep this type of tracking system going. And when our children enter kindergarten now, they are sometimes held back because of the school's non-reaction to our efforts to further their education. And the reason we were trying to stress early childhood education is because it was the money we had available, and we thought it was the most effective approach to the problems that we will be approaching in the future, and namely educating our children. We had started to design a cultural element. We were trying to work language into the program. And I feel that early childhood education is going to be the key in bringing up the future, if we have one. And some of the boards and commissions I've sat on since 1977 is I've been chairman of the board of Sean Seat from 1977 to 1980. That's the Village Corporation of Craig. I was a director until 1982. At present, I'm the chairman of the 14C3 committee, which is we are working with the city of Craig on the reconveyance that is necessary under ANCSA. We're at present on June 1st, we should be receiving the preliminary plan of survey, and we hope to be done within a year. I have been the 6th Vice President and the 5th Vice President of the Tlingit and Haida Central Council. I've been the President of the Alaska Native Brotherhood Camp Number 19 in Craig. I've been a statewide member of the State of Alaska Rural Development Council from 1980 to the present. The council, however, is not funded. I've also sat on the Craig City Board of Education, the Craig Indian Education Parent Committee, the Craig Planning and Zoning Commission. I'm a delegate to the National Congress of American Indians, a delegate to the Alaska Federation of Natives, and I've past chairman of the Federation of Southeast Alaska IRA Councils, chairman of the Craig Kuaak Marine Industrial Feasibility Study Team, a member of the Craig Kuaak Coastal Zone Management Committee, chairman of the Craig School District Long Range Facility Study Team, and chairman of the Craig OEDP Committee. I've worked as an overall economic development planning committee. The reason I tell you why are all these number of organizations that I'm sitting on or have sat on is that that is one of our major problems in rural Alaska, is that we have so many organizations and boards and commissions and different rules and regulations and criteria and guidelines to follow that we don't have enough people to sit on all these boards and commissions, and it usually ends up in a situation where we could actually call a meeting and change, and we have done it. I have done it before, as we've had the same group of people in one room and held 4 or 5 different meetings by just recessing and reconvening. It gets very confusing. And getting things done under those conditions is often very frustrating, difficult, and time-consuming. And that is one of the biggest problems that I've ever encountered as a member of any organization or board. And it's especially true in many cases of our village corporations and the regional corporation, is that things get bogged down in politics and nothing happens. And by the time we get done deciding an issue, the opportunity is lost. And a lot of the things that we have to do in the corporate system, I really can't agree with, you know, what we ended up with. But I have to admit that I feel we must work with what we have, because that may get us what we want. And I've been accused of being a radical, and a lot of people, I think, of my generation have been accused of that. But I think that that's inappropriate, because we only want back what was ours. What is ours? And what we got was a land settlement that structured our organizations under state law. We were removed entirely from the federal structure. And I think that's a key, because the placing of our organizations under a strictly dictated structural situation like we have, the corporate system, and then the special structuring of it, have made it, I think, in many ways unworkable, especially in light of things that pertain to the regions, like the 7I provision that allows the corporation only to actually retain 13% of the profits. And one of the things that they've been talking about is drawing in outside capital to help the corporation grow and expand and expand its equity base. And I can't see anybody coming in to invest in a corporation that can only keep 13% of its profits, when, you know, things like that are not a business organization. It's not designed to succeed. It was designed, so they say, to spread the profit across the state among the regions. And I have some idea of how many changes the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act went through until it got into its final form. And I think we were robbed, put it very bluntly. It started out as an idea to form one statewide corporation. And we were put into so many little groups of non-profitable resource organizations that we have the ability to make some money, but success can't be counted by just staying even. You know, we're maintaining, in a lot of villages, we're maintaining the existence of the corporation, but the resource is dwindling rapidly, and I can't see what we're going to do when that's gone. And the importance of getting out of this structure, to me, is the most important thing that I think we have to deal with. And we have available to us the IRA councils, which are actually tribal governments. chartered by the Congress of the United States of America in perpetuity, and they have the ability to charter and form their own organizations, businesses, and we aren't even trying to use them to assist our business development because to get out of taxation. We have one of the only vehicles available that's legally able to get out of taxes, and we're not trying to use it. And it becomes an issue where at times I was sitting on the IRA council, and the people that were on the IRA council voted to support an idea that we had to work with the Village Corporation, and at the Village Corporation meeting, those same people voted against that proposal, and you know, I couldn't understand why. And
where was this?
In Craig. And you know, you end up being changing your hat so many times that you know it becomes a competitive board against board type of an activity rather than a cooperative working relationship, which should be there. And it's the same people in each case. In regard to the 1985 study that the federal government is doing, I had the opportunity, if it could be called that, to meet with the Federal Regional Council in June of 1981, where the first consultant hired stood up and said that the 1985 study was designed to find out how much more money Alaska Natives had gotten as a result of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And they spent all of 15 minutes on it, so I think that the importance of what happens to us to the federal government can be viewed in that light, and it's going to be a statistical study, as you probably know. Some other things that I've been involved in on the state level, the Rural Development Council was designed in similar fashion, and the state has been telling us that they are going to assist in the development of the economic base in rural Alaska that we all need. And it's a very elusive thing because in many places they don't have the resources to develop in the first place. The state doesn't have any policy, and they don't seem very willing to develop a policy that addresses rural Alaska in any organized fashion. The Rural Development Council had started, we did a study of how contracts are let in Alaska and how they impact the employment situation in rural Alaska, and we found that approximately of the group of contracts that we had studied and researched, 58% of the contracts went straight out of state, and another 30-odd percent went straight to Anchorage or Fairbanks contractors, and the employment levels of the people hired in the bush was very, very low. And we were trying to address the issues and became defunded, and now rural policy is developed by the legislature through capital improvements projects. And I think that as the effects of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act have been, in some terms, depending on how you look at it or who you are, some positive things have happened as a result of them. But the effects look to me like they're going to be short-term effects, like the employment in the timber industry. And we are finding, of course, that not a great number of our shareholders want to be in the timber industry. A lot of village corporations and regional corporations are in the hotel business, and we're finding that not a great number of our shareholders want to be employed in the hotel industry, especially starting at the bottom. The situation of Alaska Natives today, I think that we're on the brink of survival or failure. There's going to be, I think, a very difficult time between now and 1991, merely because most people are not really addressing the issue or the issues that are coming at us as a result of 1991. We have so many issues facing us and so little resource to deal with it. The entities that we have to spend all of our time trying to fund ourselves and keep our organizations going. And it becomes similar to things like, I've been told that management by objectives has major flaws in it, is that so many people become involved in management that they forget the objective. And I've seen that happen in many, many cases. I think that the goals of our people for the future should be to look at a structure that's satisfactory to us. I think that that structure should be structured in the tribal government fashion. The corporations, I think, should be under the auspices of the tribe. The resources, I believe, belong to the tribe. We were not consulted upon in the negotiation phase of this Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And that brings me to AFN, the Alaska Federation of Natives. Alaska Federation of Natives is viewed in many ways as representing Alaska Natives. And I must say that in my case, that is not so, because I have attended every AFN convention except the last two. And I spent most of my time trying to find out who voted for me. And I finally became a delegate by being an executive committee member of the Tlingit Haida Center Council. And still find, and we discovered that AFN had become AFN Incorporated, and it was a legal manipulation such that the villages were, for all intents and purposes, removed from the process of having any influence or control over the Alaska Federation of Natives. The Alaska Federation of Natives now is composed of nearly all the members of the board of directors of AFN Incorporated and AFN Human Resources are almost nearly all regional corporation directors. And AFN is a forum for them to promote their ideas. They are the ones that had a great deal to do with what we ended up with. I think that they didn't do a very good job, and I don't think that they had the legal authority to negotiate on our behalf. They did not and do not respond to the rural Alaskan communities. And I think that that is very unfortunate, because the organization has the potential to do what we want it to do, and it could be structured to fit into something that we believe in and could support. The Tlingit Haida Center Council is a tribal government, and of the only of the 12 regions that does not have a nonprofit. And that gives us a special case in Southeast, because we have IRAs that are recognized tribal governments, and we have the Tlingit Haida Center Council, which is a recognized tribal government. So we have three governments in Heidelberg. We have the city government, we have the IRA council, and we have the Tlingit Haida Center Council, all of which deliver programs. And we have, that breeds lack of coordination and delivery of service and governance. And local control in Alaska is a major issue at this point. The jurisdiction, no powers that we have at our disposal with which to attempt to mitigate all the impact that is occurring around us, are somewhat minimal. All of the jurisdictional powers that we have available to us now are under the auspices of the state of Alaska. We have not been exercising the powers of tribal government, and the state is now becoming very, very interested in control of the resource and the country that we used to control. We have in Heidelberg a coastal zone management plan that encompasses nearly the traditional use area of the people of Heidelberg, of approximately 900,000 acres. However, at this point, the state is now developing a plan that effectively usurps all the power and authority that was given to Heidelberg in the Coastal Zone Management Plan, which wasn't a great deal. The state of Alaska is now developing a plan that would supersede our plan. And their plan is development-oriented. Our plan is more looking at preservation and enhancement. The subsistence use areas that we've identified have been traditionally used for hundreds of years, and they are still used to this day. And this island, of all islands in Southeast Alaska, is slated for the most development of any. We have, I think, I can't remember the total allowable cut of the Tongass National Forest, but it's, I think, 450 million board feet a year. We have located on the island, we have Sea Alaska, I think with about 290,000 acres of land. We have the village corporations of Kloakinia, John Seat, Kavilko, Haida Corporation, Klukwan Incorporated, Kutsnawu, all with timber programs. Nobody's, some of them are, pardon me?
On the islands.
On this island, those are the village corporations.
Well, Kutsuna, who has property on this island.
Kutsuna, who has timber cutting rights on this island.
Sorry.
Which is another issue that I won't delve into. It's a very touchy issue, but I think that that leads to another area that I have great reservations about, is I am now a principal witness in two lawsuits, one which is initiated against us and one which we are initiating against another corporation. And to me, that's a very distasteful position to be in, because they're people I know, respect, and like. And it shouldn't be happening. It should be, but it's they say the business world, you know, the litigation, and we have probably the biggest employment record for lawyers in the whole country. And I'm kind of scattering now, my shotgun approaches. But one of the things that happened to us also is that now Sea Alaska is one of the biggest, or if not the biggest, employer, private employer in Southeast Alaska. But Sea Alaska is also the biggest employer of non-natives in Southeast Alaska rather than natives. And we're beginning to see efforts, I think, to get young people into the management training system. But things that happen, like we had a recent crisis in Sea Alaska where they lost $28 million and they hired a special management consulting team to come in and clean up. Well, these people were paid, I think, approximately $340,000 a year combined. Then they did clean up the corporation, but the first people to go were shareholders. And the first people to go were low-level employees. We're burdened with more administrative capability than we need, in my opinion. And those people, I read a report when they were supposedly not, the special management team had been disbanded. And then further down in the report, you find that both people that were outside Sea Alaska Corporation had been hired as full-time staff members at the same salary level. So their cleanup of the corporation and reduction of operating costs didn't seem to exist to me. And I don't think that we can operate in an environment like that and become a successful business. You know, we're being lauded by the state. The successes are a real big item in editorials in the Juneau paper, especially because of all the economic activity that we're fostering around the state. We're making the state look good in terms of employment, and we're becoming a haven for Oregon loggers and Oregon contractors. We have a major road building company on the island that's from Kentucky. He's a nice guy, stayed in his camp, but you know, we could be putting a lot of people to work here. And he's built over 175 miles of road on this island in the last 2 or 3 years. He doesn't hire local, he hires from, his crew comes from Kentucky. Sea Alaska Corporation just finished the minerals exploration activity on the northern end of Prince of Wales Island, and they hired a Canadian, Cominco, is it? To conduct the activity.
What sort of activity?
It's a minerals exploration activity. And we do things with Sea Alaska, is when they do things like that, they seem to want to go and hire the best in the world, when we still need to find out what we're going to do about it. And we have people from Weyerhaeuser, and our marketing efforts seem to have been falling flat. And when we were first getting into the timber business, I was the chairman of Sean Seat, and we were working with Sea Alaska Timber Corporation, which was born out of an idea that we were working with the Federation of Southeast Alaska IRA Councils, as we were proposing to form a business development and marketing development cooperative, which would be responsible, or could have been responsible, for marketing all timber and fish, which were going to be exported, of course, to the Japanese and Asian markets by all of our corporations. And the reason that we were looking at this type of an organization is because we knew that in 1982, the Export Act of 1982 would pass, allowing to the formation of cooperatives just of that sort, to have a cartel-like activity going as long as it was going to reduce the balance of trade of the United States with another government, and that has now come about. See, Alaska Timber Corporation was structured differently than that. The proposed activities of the Alaska Timber Corporation were to market our timber for a higher price and bring us a higher return. And our experience with the Alaska Timber Corporation has not been very good. And again, it's all composed of our own people. And the Alaska Timber Corporation was management structure was no, I don't believe any shareholders are on the upper level of the Alaska Timber Corporation's management structure. And we have these opportunities before us, and I wish that I had had a lot more time to put together a very detailed report and what I really do feel in technical terms about this Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. But I apologize for the scattergun approach that I have had to take, but I'd like to leave you with these two studies, one on the Haidas, and this is an accident here. This is a socio-impact analysis of Heidelberg as a result of the completion of a road to Heidelberg. And I lived in Craig when the road from Hollis was first put across in 1973. And in 1980, I was the city administrator of Craig, and I watched the population double. The impact was tremendous. Craig now has something like 900 people. And the potential for change in Heidelberg is there now, the immediacy is there, the urgency is there, the impacts are coming, and I see in the future, in my opinion, I believe that Prince of Wales Island is going to look like Vancouver Island, with roads up and down the coast and up and down the island and communities on both shores, and I think that we're going to be looking at something on the order of 15,000 people living on this island within 15 years. So what we do now has so much importance to the future that I don't think the realization on the part of all of our people is always there. And what we do today is going to determine what we have tomorrow. And if we keep doing things the way we're doing them today, tomorrow we're not going to have anything. I am the chairman, or was the chairman, of a committee that was in charge of developing a shareholder land disposal program for Sean Seat. I have many reservations about it, but it was what our shareholders wanted, and they voted for it, and we have now given them an acre and a half of land. A disposal of the assets of our corporation. And what I can see there is that the problems in the future that the bankers and financial institutions looking at our track record are going to see the numerous times where we have been disposing or distributing and liquidating assets of our corporation. That is not going to serve us as a positive. Then we're not going to be looked at positively for that one by financial institutions, because that is just not proper to do when your bottom line does not show the profit level that's necessary to do something like that. But it was necessary that we do that, because village corporations and Angsta corporations are not corporations in the real sense of the word, because we are expected and demanded to provide these services and some social services and assistance to shareholders. And I think with that, I've said about all I can say right now, and I'd once again like to thank you for the opportunity to say what I have said. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Yeah, let me just ask you about IRAs in Southeast Alaska. Did you say that there is a recognized federally chartered IRA in all the villages of Southeast Alaska?
I believe there's 19 in Southeast Alaska.
You said that Tlingit and Haida Central Council is a recognized REA.
No,
IRA.
No, Tlingit and Haida Central Council is a recognized tribal government as a result of the Tlingit and Haida Judgment Act. I think it was 1975. No, yeah, was it 1768? And 65? We should know all this. But as a result of that act, the Tlingit Haida Central Council was formed because the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Alaska Native Sisterhood, who instituted the lawsuit on behalf of the Tlingit Haida tribes, were deemed to be inappropriate entity for administering the judgment fund because they're a fraternal organization. And out of the ANB and ANS, they formed the Tlingit Haida Central Council.
Yeah, I follow you there. I'd heard about that.
And the Tlingit Haida Central Council, for the purposes of that act, this is my opinion, by the way, is for the purposes of that act are a tribal government. And in many ways, the Tlingit Haida Central Council has the authority, as a result of resolutions from village or village IRAs, to provide other governmental services on behalf of the village.
Well, you said that there was a Federation of Southeast Alaskan IRA Councils, and I wondered what its relationship is to Tlingit and Haida Central Council.
The Federation of IRA Councils was formed to attempt, it was an attempt to organize the IRAs, and I think it was really, the true purpose was to try to get the business development cooperative going, and also to try to focus on the IRA issue that was just beginning to emerge at the time, because there's a great deal of resistance to change on the part of political organizations that have developed their own bureaucracy, which the Tlingit Haida Central Council has managed to do over a number of years. As a matter of fact, if I may say so, many of the employees that went over and formed the Tlingit Haida Central Council were former BIA employees or are former BIA employees. So we are dealing with, in many cases, the same attitudes that prevailed in the Bureau of Indian Affairs prior to the formation of the Central Council. And in the past, the Central Council has made attempts to have themselves designated as the sole and supreme governing body of the Tlingit and Haida Indian tribes, and there was not, as far as I can remember,